Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. With the victory of Sooronbay Jeenbekov, Kyrgyzstan's former president Almazbek Atambayev transferred the presidency for his credit peacefully and on time to his elected successor, a practice that is rare in Central Asia. But his elected successor, Jeenbekov, happened to be his favorite candidate, and Atambayev spared nothing to get him elected. And by doing so, he might have left an incredibly complicated and messy legacy for his successor to deal with. The question is, how much of damage are we talking about? How can President Jeenbekov deal with it? What has to happen that things get back to normal? This is in foreign relations, which also directly linked to the things and challenges that Jeenbekov must handle locally. On today's Majlis, we plan to explore all these questions. To do so, I'm joined by Catherine Putz, a managing editor of The Diplomat, who been to Kyrgyzstan on several occasions and, as a matter of fact, just came back from Uzbekistan. Catherine is based in Washington, D.C. Temur Toktonaliyev is joining us from Bishkek, who is the Kyrgyzstan editor of the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. And Bruce Panier is with us from Prague, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlok Owazi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey.
Very nice to have you. So, Temur, let's get started with you. When we talk about the former president, Atambayev, many things come to mind. Obviously, there are a lot to talk about his external politics, but let's start with the domestic situation. So, what is that he is leaving for President Jeenbekov?
Before the inauguration, he made a press conference.
Right.
And where he shared some his further plans on what is he is going to do in Kyrgyz politics, in Kyrgyzstan. And he actually promised that Jeenbekov, it was expected that he will be independent, that Atambayev won't interfere to the work process of Sooronbay Jeenbekov, but just he noted that if Jeenbekov or Prime Minister Sapar Isakov will ask him for some advice, he could share his experience, his connections with different foreign leaders. Mm. Yeah, and from this point of view, I think now it's some kind of, messy. From one point of view, we are seeing that Jeenbekov is a member of Atambayev's team.
Right.
He was with him for 20 years, and Atambayev, he said about that, yeah? But at the same time, for example, now we see the first signal that Jeenbekov today or yesterday, he met with Nursultan Nazarbayev in Minsk. Yeah. And as we can see, Nursultan Nazarbayev, he was very positive about Jeenbekov, and Nazarbayev, he promised that all these, different problems on the Kyrgyz-Kazakh border, some kind of will be negotiated. He's very looking forward to cooperate with Jeenbekov and so on. Kind of, give signals that maybe Jeenbekov could be some kind of, independent player.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because before, here experts were talking that what could Jeenbekov do? He can't do anything because he is just, another player of Atambayev's team, and he can't do nothing. But now we see that, once Atambayev resigned, and since Jeenbekov came, and Kyrgyz-Kazakh relations, so there are, signals for positive changes.
That is an interesting sign, and we would like to talk about this more in the second part of the debate. But remaining local, Bruce, there are many faults in Atambayev's leadership, but for his credit, we must say that perhaps this is the first time an elected president is transferring the office to another elected president in Central Asia peacefully and on time. A big step. But when we talk about Atambayev's domestic legacy, Bruce, what comes to your mind?
Well, of course, as you mentioned, you can't emphasize enough how important it was that Atambayev left and handed over the post to somebody else. However, a lot of people give credit to Atambayev for maintaining stability in Kyrgyzstan,
right,
which is, of course, no small matter after 2005 and 2010 revolutions. But the fact is that the economic situation really hasn't improved a whole lot. There's still a real problem with ethnic harmony In Kyrgyzstan, which comes from the, of course, the 2010 ethnic riots between Uzbeks and Kyrgyz, but it doesn't even just concern like the Uzbek population too. There's other questions. Other groups have had some problems on occasion with this. There is a growing sense of nationalism in Kyrgyzstan, and so you know you have the economic problem. You got to get the Kyrgyz, all the people in Kyrgyzstan, to understand that they all enjoy the same rights and that they're all important for the country, of course. And then there's a lot of infrastructure problems that still need to be worked out. It's true, they've been doing better with supplying electricity and heating and stuff. You know, they got the new Kamin.ka power line that runs from the south up to the north. That helps out a lot. Gazprom, of course, took over the Kyrgyz gas network. That seems to be helping out a little bit. But those problems still aren't solved. Kyrgyzstan still needs to try to tap into its own hydropower potential so that it can truly become at least energy independent, and also have better connections to export and import goods, you know, that to China through Kazakhstan. Uzbekistan, of course, is opening up, so they're going to want to try to connect themselves over there so that they can help develop their own domestic economy. You know, so it's really those kind of things. It's basic stuff, but it really needs to be addressed. It managed to slide by when Atambayev was there, but somebody has got to do something to get certainly the economy up and running and try to boost it a little bit.
Kathy, anything to add?
I would just bounce off Bruce's point about the economy. I was looking at the GDP growth rates the other day, and it looks like a roller coaster, and it has for the last 20 years. So it's kind of hard to judge Atambayev's impact on the Kyrgyz economy because it's just up and down, and that's how it's always been. I think in terms of his legacy, especially in domestic issues, the constitutional changes that were put through last year, and I think they come into effect in December, that's going to be an important thing to watch to see how that impacts the balance of power between the president and the prime minister. And I think that's where the core of Atambayev's legacy is going to be, is how he impacted the Kyrgyz political system.
Political system is one thing. Timur, I want to get your point on this once more. In terms of economy, tell me please, are there more people employed today compared to pre-Atambayev era? Are your roots any better today compared to pre-Atambayev era? Tell me examples.
Well, I don't know exactly, you know, figures on that. But to be honest, as, you know, local citizen, I'm living here and watching everything. I don't see that actually there have been created, you know, some big companies or different, I don't know, different companies and economical projects, which, you know, gave opportunities here for local citizens to be employed. We are witnessing that still a lot of young people, especially from regions, they are moving to Russia, to Kazakhstan. I can say, for example, that from my school where I have you know, graduated, finished, about 10 or 15 boys from my class, they also moved to Russia in order to find job. And in terms of economy, I fully agree with Bruce that for these 6 years, we actually haven't been witnessing that economy has been improved, that people started living better, because we still, yes, we have in Bishkek construction boom, yeah, something improved, but it is improved because business is developing. Yeah, it's not an impact of the government or governors, it's just, you know, natural business models. Yeah. And when Atambayev and his teams, they are, you know, showing that GDP has grown, that they, you know, managed to find these loans and grants from China, it's actually not seen kind of a big achievement, you know, because all these loans, they were from China, they were for, you know, repairing roads, yeah, and some maybe we have TETs. I don't know how to translate to English this.
Thermal power plant.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's not loans for, you know, boosting economy, yeah? And 3 years ago, 4 years ago, actually Atambayev was saying that if we join the Eurasian Economic Union, our economy will boost, that it will, you know, give opportunity to create local, you know, different companies, production companies, and we will you know, export all these products to Russia, to Kazakhstan, to other these member countries. But after 3 years, we are seeing that these companies haven't been created, and moreover, now, in this year, we were witnessing this big problem, yeah, in the border of two EU countries, when our, you know, producers from agriculture sector, especially, they couldn't export any of their fruits, different products to the Kazakhstan, to Russia, yeah, and they were witnessing a lot of big financial problems.
Yeah, joining Eurasian Economic Union was another thing that Atambayev is leaving with all of it is positive and negative sides. Bruce, obviously Kyrgyzstan is, as you mentioned, is more stable, at least no imminent threat to the government, and that's another factor we should mention to Atambayev's credit. But while stable, the trajectory of the country has slightly shifted towards authoritarian. A couple of his political opponents are in jail. He was tough on media. Kyrgyzstan is no more island of democracy in Central Asia as it used to be known in the past. So tell us more about this aspect of his legacy.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because this was something that I really wanted to mention, is that among the many important things that Jay and Bekov needs to take on, one thing that he really needs to work with is the way the political parties are interacting with each other. Now, certainly there's been a lot of damage done, you know, with the legal cases against Omurbek Tekibayev and other members of the Atamakin party. But there is this, at least I see, the rise of the Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan, which is, of course, Atambayev and Jay and Bekov's party. And they're going to have to be really careful how they do this, because this was Kurmanbek Bakiyev's downfall, was that he created, in effect, a ruling party. And that was one of the biggest problems that led to his eventual ouster in 2010. And, you know, so we got Atamakin's already having problems, you know, and then we got Omurbek Babanov and the Republika Party. And of course, he's stepped down, I believe, because this was some kind of deal. He would stay out of politics for a while and he'd keep himself out of jail, which is a very bad way to go about this. But Atambayev has left Jay and Bekov with parties that are very unhappy with the last year, certainly, of Atambayev's rule. And, you know, I mentioned the Republika and Atamakin, but I could throw in Akshumkar, Butun Kyrgyzstan. I mean, there's a few are not very pleased with the balance of power and their role in the government. And this is something that Jay and Bekov is going to have to deal with and try to keep his party strong, certainly, but at the same time, let the other ones know that they're included. There's another thing to remember, too, that the current prime minister of Kyrgyzstan, Sapar Isakov, that's an Atambayev guy. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how long Jay and Bekov keeps him. And maybe the deal is that he'll keep him. But as we know from Kyrgyz history, prime ministers don't last very long in Kyrgyzstan. So you can expect that sometime in the next 12 to 18 months at the most, they're going to have a problem and they're going to have to replace the prime minister. And it's going to be interesting to see who Jay and Bekov would turn to, that would be acceptable for Jay and Bekov anyway, to be a substitute for Sapar Isakov, who was clearly an Atambayev guy.
Katie, earlier you were mentioning the political aspect, but my another question to you is, as a journalist, you follow developments in Kyrgyzstan in terms of media and also NGOs. The steps that the Atambayev has taken to minimize the limited freedoms that they enjoyed in Kyrgyzstan, what is that legacy looks like, and what is the immediate steps that Jean Bekov has to take on that direction?
I mean, I think especially the cases that have been lobbied against local media outlets for defamation, insulting the president, these kinds of things. One, for those media outlets, it certainly is an existential crisis, because without being able to run, they're going to implode. But the second effect of that is other media outlets then look at what they were essentially slapped by the state for doing and shy away from doing that. And I think you'll see a little bit more self-censorship in terms of how media outlets cover government decisions. And the ultimate impact of that is a lower level of discourse about policy issues that you need a free and open media to do, to ask the questions, to air the issues, to sort of bring the sides together and talk about the different solutions for Kyrgyzstan's numerous problems, many of them in the economy. And so I think that's certainly a very negative legacy. Atambayev, as somebody who was very, very much a hothead and liked to insult people, didn't really take insults as well. Yeah. And so, you know, I think he had a little bit of a thin skin. And that's, I guess, just my personal take on that. But I think for Zhinbekov, it's going to be very important to not follow in Atambayev's footsteps, because I think you're certainly nearing a precipice in Kyrgyzstan that could really dismantle what is a vibrant, relative to the rest of the region, a vibrant media atmosphere. And it would be quite the shame to pull that progress back.
Timur, we now talking about the restrictions in that light, like political restrictions that were imposed during Atambayev's era in Kyrgyzstan, and also the controversial steps that he has taken to restrict independent media in NGOs. While he was taking all these steps, I think Zhinbekov was also part of his administration in this the other way. So what are the expectations from him to take an independent step that you were hinting earlier on these directions?
I think Zhinbekov, he is trying to be very careful not to insult Atambayev, because as we can see, Atambayev can become, you know, very easily be angry and to take different harsh actions. In the case of Babanov and Tikhebaev, we were witnessing it. And from this point of view, I think Zhinbekov won't interfere to these, you know, cases, Atambayev vs. these independent media, Zanoza, 24.kg, and so on. And courts seems will follow what Atambayev thinks. They will, you know, make decision according to that. But I think Zhinbekov, he's understands that being such kind of, you know, opening war against Kyrgyz media, it's not a good tactic. Yeah, and maybe Zhinbekov, he'll be more careful and he won't initiate different cases, yeah, against media. But to be honest, we don't have to illusion about him. I don't think that Zhinbekov is a person who values freedom of speech, democracy, and so on. And as soon as maybe there will be some big journalistic investigations, maybe who knows, yeah, about his actions, maybe he will sue, yeah, against those media.
Thank you very much, Timur. Now, the biggest blunder that Atambayev got into was the emotional confrontation with Nazarbayev in his last days in the office, leading Kyrgyzstan to many unnecessary problems and also creating a biggest foreign policy challenge for his successor. Now, where Kyrgyzstan stands today, vice versa, in pre-Atambayev in terms of its foreign relations, and what does this mean to President Zhinbekov's term in office? We will continue Majlis discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like the Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are discussing Atambayev's legacy in Kyrgyzstan. Joining me in the discussion are Catherine Putz, managing editor of The Diplomat, Timur Tokhtonaliyev, Kyrgyzstan editor of the Institute for War and Peace Reporting, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Owazi. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, colleagues. Now, talking about foreign policy, Kazakhstan comes first in mind. There appears to be some level of softening on Nazarbayev's side, as Timur, you mentioned, but we will get back to it shortly. Now, looking back to developments during the last couple of months or weeks leading up to the election, what legacy Atambayev is leaving in regard to Kyrgyzstan's relations with Kazakhstan? Maybe, Bruce, we can start with you on this.
Well, I think if you asked Atambayev himself what legacy he left with vis-a-vis relations with Kazakhstan, he would say that he showed the Kazakhstan that Kyrgyzstan couldn't be pushed around. Now, if you ask some Kazakh officials, they would probably respond that they did push Kyrgyzstan around and show them exactly what could happen if the government in Bishkek decides to be nasty or play hardball with Astana, you know, certainly the border being shut was, you know, a huge blow for Kyrgyzstan, and they're going to feel that for a while now. I know we're not talking about Nazarbayev's meeting today yet, but in fact, while this border was having problems, for example, coal shipments from Kazakhstan were at least greatly curtailed. And in the coming weeks, this is going to be something that people are going to realize, because the price of coal is going to go up and they need that for heating in their homes. So while Atambayev might have made a point of, you know, that Kyrgyzstan is an independent government, and they didn't appreciate the fact that Nazarbayev seemed to be playing politics ahead of Kyrgyzstan's presidential election, I think in the end, you'd have to say that Kyrgyzstan was the loser on this one, because by trying to show Kazakhstan that they were strong, Kazakhstan retaliated by showing Kyrgyzstan that they were a lot weaker than they thought, and Kazakhstan could impose their will, certainly more or less on trade relations with Kyrgyzstan. And it says something, too, that Atambayev appealed to the Eurasian Economic Union and to the World Trade Organization, say, you know, please help us out and try to put some pressure on Kazakhstan. And in neither case did that seem to have any effect at all. And certainly in the case of the Eurasian Economic Union, it was almost impossible that it ever would, because the main partner in that whole organization is Russia. Russia shares a 7,000-kilometer-long border with Kazakhstan. Nazarbayev and Putin are good friends. They've known each other for, you know, 20 years, practically, both of being heads of state, or, you know, Putin was prime minister for a while there. So that was never going to go anywhere, appealing to Russia to help out with Kazakhstan, because Russia, in the end, will always be on Kazakhstan's side. And the same with trying to get some Chinese support. You know, Kazakhstan has an oil pipeline that supplies China, and there's three gas lines that come from Turkmenistan and go through Kazakhstan and supply China. And if you're sitting in Beijing and Kyrgyzstan says, can't you do something about the Kazakhs, then you're going to look at and see what you got from what you're getting from Kazakhstan and what you're getting from Kyrgyzstan, and conclude probably that you're better off siding with Kazakhstan. So very poorly done.
Interesting, Kathy. You know, we've been talking about this a little bit earlier, though. There are some signs of normalization in terms of Kyrgyz-Kazakh relations, at least to the point that Nazarbayev shook hands of Jeenbekov, I think, today or yesterday in Minsk. Atambayev kind of appears to be stepping back, at least not saying anything controversial lately after he left the presidential office. So, but what it has to take that things gets back normal, if it is all possible?
I assume that things will eventually return to normal. I think the Kazakhs, certainly in terms of this border problem, I think Bruce is entirely right. The Kazakhs kind of pushed back and said, no, you cannot push us around. And the Kyrgyz are certainly the losers in this arrangement. It's Kyrgyz exporters who are going to be hurting. And as Bruce said, those buying coal are going to be hurting. The Kazakhs aren't going to be hurting from all this. So they can make this go on as long as they want to. I think Kazakhstan will eventually pull some of this back. And while it's important that Jeenbekov and Nazarbayev shook hands, I was just reading an article on Eurasianet about a documentary that aired in Kazakhstan last night about the Kyrgyz revolution in 2010 that included an interview with Bakiyev.
Yeah.
And so that's a pretty low blow from the Kyrgyz perspective. So it's certainly on the political level, you might be seeing them shaking hands, but what's actually being discussed? What are the next steps? What can Jeenbekov do to essentially apologize to Kazakhstan, apologize to Nazarbayev, and then hope that they stop tightening the screws on the border? And it certainly, you know, it comes down to Nazarbayev's whim, I think. And so what Jeenbekov can do, I don't know. I mean, he was handed a massive problem that I don't know that he has a route other than trying to set himself apart from Atambayev. But as we've discussed, there's only so far he can. They're both members of the same party. He's certainly following in Atambayev's political legacy. Sort of his first visit was to Russia,
right.
And that I think was symbolic of the direction that Atambayev was moving the country in toward the end of his term, and Jeenbekov's going to continue that. It's kind of up to Astana when they want to stop tightening these screws, and maybe Russia will say something privately to the Kazakhs, because this certainly also is showing, if we didn't think the Eurasian Economic Union was a weak body before, it certainly looks like one now.
Yeah.
And so the longer that goes on, the worse it looks for Russia in terms of the reputation of that body as being this geopolitical center that they want it to be. If a little spat between the leaders of two of the Central Asian states can halt trade on part of the Eurasian Economic Union, that doesn't say very much about the union's standards.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Now, Timur, you were earlier talking about Nazarbayev-Jeenbekov meeting in Minsk. Now, President Jeenbekov seems to be walking on a really thin line here. You know, wants to normalize, obviously, Kyrgyzstan's relationships with Kazakhstan. Also, don't like to anger Atambayev. So what's the right balance for him?
Well, you know, 2 weeks ago when I attended in the press conference of Atambayev, he, about Kazakhstan, he said such kind of thing that he has such kind of, you know, harsh character and he couldn't change himself because he used to speak very directly to different people and he admitted that maybe it created some problems. And he said that now you have Sapar Isakov, you have Jeenbekov, they are different persons than me and they will help normalize situation with Kazakhstan. And from this point of view, I think Atambayev, he actually admits when he is alone, yeah, that Kyrgyz-Kazakh relations, they should be normalized and we actually were witnessing how Kazakhstan impacts, yeah, on Kyrgyz economy, on different, you know, this relation. But of course, yes, I understand your question that Jeenbekov should understand not going too far from his own cabinet. I mean, Atambayev, he formally resigned, but informally he will continue to influence to Kyrgyz politics, to foreign relations, because, for example, he, you know, such kind of, you know, he said that he is established a good relations with Russia, and if Jeenbekov or Sapar Isakov needs his help, he could help with that, yeah, and it was such kind of, you know, signal, yeah, that yes, I'm resigned, but I could be very useful for you, yeah, and do not forget about me, because I have my own connections.
Bruce, let me paraphrase this question to you. Is there any risk that Jeenbekov is running in terms of his efforts to normalize Kyrgyzstan's relationships with Kazakhstan? Especially, I'm talking about the risk that he might anger Atambayev, given his emotional reactions in the past, again, Nazarbayev, that he was not ready to apologize, and he said many words that that are controversial in Central Asia against Nazarbayev. What's your take on that?
Well, this is really a question of how much loyalty Jeenbekov personally feels toward Atambayev. We've kind of hit around this all the time, and I mentioned that, you know, Atambayev, when he went off on Kazakhstan, he didn't get a lot of support, any that I remember. It wasn't, I don't remember, except for some people in Kazakhstan who agreed that his comments on Nazarbayev being an aged leader and maybe he should step aside. There was some people there that thought that maybe that was right on the money. But as among leaders, he didn't get any support for that attack at all. So in some ways, Jeenbekov has kind of a free hand here. You got to let some time go by, that's for sure. And Atambayev is still a powerful political player at the moment in Kyrgyzstan. So you got to watch it. But Jeenbekov probably should detach himself from Atambayev's legacy at the first convenient opportunity. And I would imagine that is not going to be that far down the road. Once people start to forget a little bit about Atambayev, and if he can just keep him at arm's length so that his power kind of wanes a little bit. You know, and of course, the domestic political situation in Kyrgyzstan is always very fluid. So there's shifting alliances that are going on all the time. You can imagine 6 months from now, the political situation inside Kyrgyzstan won't look very much like it does right at the moment. There's going to be a lot of moving around. And like I said, there's undoubtedly going to be a change in the prime minister. What if Isakov goes and they find a prime minister that's from another party, and that's happened many times, you know, even including parties that weren't even represented in parliament, you know, then you already paved the way for detaching even more from Atambayev and moving out on your own independent course, which certainly in the case of Kazakhstan would be something they would greet very, very warmly. To see that they had someone who had departed from Atambayev's path, at least as concerning relations with Kazakhstan in the last couple months, and was trying to get, you know, a new understanding. You know, the fact that Atambayev leaves Jeenbekov with a roadmap for restoring relations with Kazakhstan says a lot. There's never been a roadmap for relations between any two Central Asian states, and Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan got along really well for all this time. I would have never expected that those two countries would have needed a roadmap to restore relations between each other. So, as we've said, there's a lot of things he's got to take care of. And I do think that as time goes by since Atambayev has been in power, you'll see and hear less about Atambayev And without trying to criticize him or you know, put cast him in a bad light, I think Jan Beckup will just move away and start pursuing a policy which is good for the people of Kyrgyzstan, or at least good for Kyrgyzstan, which is what he should be doing anyway.
Can he do that? I mean, we also have to keep in mind that Atambayev is planning to play some sort of political role in the future, especially during the forthcoming elections, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. What he was saying is that he wants to lead his party in the elections, right? So will he let Jeenbekov move away from him?
Well, we just seen Jeenbekov in Russia, and he just met with Kazakhstan. Now, if he got the support of Putin, Nazarbayev, and we assume that Jeenbekov will be making his trip to China pretty soon, if they all tell Jeenbekov, we're with you, do what you have to do to get your country headed in the right direction again, Atambayev can do anything he wants. And between the Kremlin and Beijing and Astana, if Atambayev makes a move, that I think they could shut him down pretty effectively and pretty quickly.
Katie, earlier you touched upon that. So while President Jeenbekov is flirting with Putin as he made his first trip there, is there anything U.S. should be watching at? Obviously, Atambayev is another gamble was to put the trajectory of his country into an opposite direction when it comes to Bishkek's relations with Washington.
That's a very good question. I think, you know, the U.S. relationship with Kyrgyzstan was certainly set back a few years ago, the whole canceling of a cooperation treaty and sort of dialing back the, I think it was tax incentives that USAID had in importing stuff. I think there's certainly room to re-engage there. I don't know how much the U.S. really cares that about Kyrgyzstan at this point, to be frank. It's, you know, it's a small country. There's no longer a military base there. I think in terms of engagement in Central Asia, the focus right now is entirely on Uzbekistan. And so Kyrgyzstan gets to come along in so much as it takes part in, I think, some of the stuff that's happening in Uzbekistan. But the potential for the U.S.-Kyrgyz relationship, I think, still goes back to the same things it had been based on, aside from the military aspect and sort of the humanitarian stuff. So development projects, tourism promotion, these kind of soft power things are really where I think the focus for the United States is going to continue to be. And if Jeenbekov can sort of allow these things to progress that way, then that I think would be great for the relationship.
Now, Timur, Bruce, feel free to grab this question, whoever wants. Now, we spoke about Kazakhstan and briefly touched the U.S.-Kyrgyz relationship. What are the other foreign relations-related matter we should be looking at that requires Jeenbekov's attention going forward?
I'll let Timur go first.
Okay, I will try. I think Uzbekistan, it's a very good way to analyze, to talk about more about that. Because when, you know, all this conflict with Kazakhstan started, Atambayev also mentioned that, you know, don't think that Kazakhstan has kind of, you know, dominance, yeah, for window to other world. Yeah, we also have Uzbekistan. We can improve our relations with Uzbekistan. We can export our agriculture products, open, companies together. Yeah, and looking to that side also. And it was kind of a new way. And maybe more perspective because Uzbekistan, we are seeing that they also are trying to have better cooperation with other countries, also with Kyrgyzstan. And of course, you know, all these talkings about companies and these ambitious projects, we will see how it will be realized. Yeah, but from now, at least we can, you know, maybe improve our exports, agriculture, yeah, because in Uzbekistan, in Fergana Valley, fruits, different other products, they grown up faster in spring than in Kyrgyzstan, so they can export to Kyrgyzstan. When our products are ready in autumn, we can export to Uzbekistan, yeah, and also we have Karasu market, yeah, and if Uzbek side will give opportunity to export, to import more goods from Karasu, it will also, you know, strengthen our relations, yeah, and I think in Jeenbekov's and in next year, in upcoming years, it will be very interesting to look how these relations with Uzbekistan will be developing.
Bruce, one thing is kind of I remember from your last article that Kazakhstan is suddenly become a player in Kyrgyzstan. When you talk about the foreign relations of Kyrgyzstan going forward, could you also a little bit touch upon that? How do you see things developing going forward in terms of Kazakhstan's role in Kyrgyzstan's internal affairs?
Well, you know, as I mentioned in the article, Kazakh-Kyrgyz ties have always been really close. So there's a lot of connections that go across this border on every level you can imagine, economic, political, you know, all kinds of stuff. Kazakhstan has never, I've never seen them like actually interfere in any of Kyrgyzstan's political process. Although that said, Mukhtar Ablazov, the now Kazakh opposition figure, will say that he's responsible for funding the 2005, I forget which, one of the Kyrgyz revolutions anyway. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence for that. However, you know, as I mentioned in the article, I think Kazakhstan's, after these last couple months, Kazakhstan has always had the ability to exert some influence on Kyrgyzstan's politics. And I think they're going to be much more interested in trying to do that now, just to make sure that they don't end up with this situation. Because let's face it, this was embarrassing to everybody that this happened. Kazakhstan couldn't have liked it any more than people in Kyrgyzstan liked the fact that the border had to be closed and there was this exchange of nasty comments, you know, and stuff. I think they're going to pay a lot more attention, and where they see a chance for opportunity to get someone who's well inclined toward doing business with Kazakhstan or being a partner with Kazakhstan, they will probably do what they can to support that person inside Kyrgyzstan. You know, and moving away from Kazakhstan, there's a couple things that I would mention that are pretty positive. One, China is of course going to stick with, China likes the status quo. Right. You know, they got everything going in Kyrgyzstan. So Jeenbekov inherits benign, even very beneficial trade partner in China, and that's bound to go on. Now, how much re-export they're going to be able to do from China after Sagantayev, Kazakhstan's prime minister, basically blew the whistle on him at the CIS meeting for illegally re-exporting Chinese goods without paying the proper duties and tariffs. I don't know. So that might put a little bit of a crimp in it, but China's never going to lose interest in Kyrgyzstan, so that helps. For what it's worth, you know, I was very impressed that EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini made a trip to Kyrgyzstan before she went to Uzbekistan, where I know Katie saw her. But that was a symbolic visit that showed that they appreciated the fact that Kyrgyzstan did hold a presidential election and exchange, you know, and have a change of power from one elected president to another. You know, that kind of got lost in the shuffle of all the stuff that was happening. But I thought that was a real positive signal that the West wants to remain engaged with Kyrgyzstan, but was appreciative of the fact that they had done something which should provide a model for some of the other Central Asian states. So, you know, certainly the door is still open to the West. We know the door is open to the East, to China. Russia will always be a partner. We've done shows dedicated to just Russian influence in Kyrgyzstan. We know that they're not going away anytime soon. You know, and eventually, you know, as Katie said, and as Timur knows, the relations between Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan will get back on track. It might take a little while. And of course, Kazakhstan's going to be a little wary in the future of what Kyrgyz domestic politics look like and what officials are saying about Kazakhstan. But, you know, overall, I'm kind of optimistic for the way things will go in the next few years, as long as they don't have huge economic setbacks that spark some problems. This could work out for them, certainly in terms of foreign policy.
Right. Thank you very much, Bruce. You know, from very warm relations with President Erdogan of Turkey, Atambayev also distanced the country from Turkey in his last days. His stance on Erdogan on his demand to shut the Gulen schools were interesting. I don't know how much of a factor it is for Jeenbekov, although I see the latest news is that Turkish aviation management company might be taking over the management of some of the Kyrgyz airports. So I think we are already over time. So with this, thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok OZ. And also big thanks goes to Catherine Putz, managing editor of The Diplomat in Washington, D.C., and Timur Toktonaliyev, Kyrgyzstan editor of Institute for War and Peace reporting in Bishkek. Thank you very much for your time and thoughts, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.